Today's gospel is probably one of the most, I'm not going to say misinterpreted, because it's not, but one of the most underinterpreted and underapplied gospels I've seen in a long time. Let me bring it in focus for you. First of all, the superficial, and then the deeper implications of this. Notice that what's happening here is the background hostility towards Jesus. The background hostility, this is one of the things that I'm always aware of too, that the background hostility at Jesus is coming primarily from religious people, the scribes and the Pharisees. Let's not forget that religion is not always a positive. Religion can make you worse if you use it wrongly. And Jesus was very clear about that. Jesus said, quoting from the scriptures, he said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. You travel land and sea to make a convert. And yet, when you're finished with them, they're twice as fit for hell as you are yourselves." That's a direct quote from Jesus. So just because you get religion doesn't mean that you're a better person. You have to excuse me, my allergies give me this tickle. Okay, so the very first thing is notice that it's the scribes and the Pharisees that are trying to entrap Jesus. And he recognizes it. He recognizes it. And they think they've got him. Because you see, either way he answers, is it lawful to pay tax to Caesar or not? Either way he answers, they can get him. If he says yes, it's lawful to pay your tax to Caesar, then they go to the rest of the Jews and say, see, he's on the side of the occupying Romans. And if he says no, then they'll go to the Romans and say, see, he is fomenting sedition and rebellion by saying, don't pay your taxes to Caesar. So they think they have a foolproof place to do what's called a gotcha. And so they go before Jesus and they say, and they prepare it. The way they prepare it is they think that they're really, you know, getting it ready for him to really slip up. Note, did you notice the way they prepared it? Lord, we know that you're a truthful man. We know that you would never tell a lie. We know that you don't care what people think of you. It's, you know, it's preparing for it with sarcasm what they're about, the trap that they're about. They're greasing the way. And Jesus sees this. You know, he looks at them and he says, oh, you know, you can almost imagine what he's thinking inside. It's when you get a compliment, you ever get a compliment from people who do not like you. Yeah, if you get a compliment from people you do not like, you know something's coming. So they say, is it lawful? Here comes the trap. Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And then, expecting either or, they go, Jesus says, show me the coin. Show me the coin. And so they give him a coin. And by the way, this is a Roman coin that you can look up on the internet. And actually, that's a picture of one right there. Those are Roman coins that have been found all over the Mediterranean and the former Roman Empire. Now, you can see them on the internet. You can probably buy them in your collections. So Jesus says, looks at the coin and says, whose image is on that coin? Now, Before you use the word, I move on from there. This is an interesting thing. I'm not a student of Greek, but I listen, by the way, on Monday nights. On Monday nights, from 7:15 to 9 o'clock, I get together with parishioners, and we listen to a biblical scholar take these gospels apart for the following Sunday. So, if any of you are free, you're welcome to join us, room 219, at 7:15. But anyway. What the scholar said, when you say the image, the original Greek word that's being used is the word icon. And so Jesus says, actually, whose icon is this? Now, we have become familiar with the word icon, mostly through our computers. But the word icon actually has had a long history, and I don't want to go too much into it, but the original meaning of an icon, this is an icon. It is an image, but it is supposed to be a sacred image that draws your mind and heart to God. Okay? So the original meaning of icon is this. Now, when Jesus says, whose icon is this? They say, Caesar's. And of course, we get the great response, well, then give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. Now, at first, we're thinking, okay, so Jesus is separating church and state. Well, not bad. Not bad. But here's where it gets a little bit deeper. You see, the icon of Caesar is the icon of God. Now, why do I say that? Because ever since Julius Caesar and Augustus Caesar, those two emperors were declared to be divine. And so the icon of the Caesar is an icon of a Roman god. Okay? And so, immediately, what you have is the competition between loyalty to two different gods. You're either a Roman citizen with Caesar as your god, and or you're a true Jew with, or and a true human with loyalty to the God of heaven. Now, there is a difference. There is a difference. And I don't know if you caught it in the first reading. But in the first reading, God is speaking about an ancient emperor, not of Rome, but of one of the tribes of pagans. The emperor's name is Cyrus. And Cyrus considered himself to be a god. And so what God in the Old Testament is doing is saying, Cyrus, you may have all kinds of power, and if I want to, I'll use you. But it's I who allow you to do that, even though you do not know me. You ain't no god, Cyrus. You're my puppet, and I'm using you. And so there's a subtle, notice what the church does. It puts that Old Testament reading to contrast it with another god in the New Testament, the Caesar. So what the scripture here is referring to is the constant attempt to divinize, to make godly, or to divinize the state. And to make the state be the ultimate dictator or the ultimate authority on what you should do with your life. Now, so far, what you're dealing with is the fact that Jesus is saying, if this is Caesar's icon, Well, I don't care what you do with it. Give it to him. So he is saying that there is a legitimate place for secular rulers. And indeed, that's something that we are taught, you know, that wherever we live, and even St. Paul would make the statement to say, pray for your rulers. Pray that they're good earthly rulers. The church is not supposed to be a secular ruler. That's not what we do. That's why, for example, even during elections here, not only by state law, but actually by church law, I am prohibited from telling you which candidate I think you should vote for. I am not allowed to do that. I can tell you which policies we as Christians hold to be closer or farther away from what gospel values are, but I can't tell you who to vote for. And that's policy all over the world in the Catholic Church. But what's happening here, so then Jesus is saying, look, give it to Caesar, belongs to him. But then he says, give to God what belongs to God. Now, this is where it gets a little interesting and tricky. So the question is, what does belong to God? What does? Well, notice what made the coin belong to Caesar. It was the icon of Caesar that was on the coin. That's what made it belong to Caesar. So what makes something belong to God? We'll apply the same thing. It would be the icon of God that belongs to God. Now, at first you go, okay, so what are we talking about here? Well, go back to Genesis. And when you go back to Genesis, you get, and God made, on the sixth day, God made man in his icon and likeness. The word icon is used. Notice what's happening. In the beginning and the sixth day, the final day of creation, God has created everything. But he puts his icon in human beings. What Jesus is remembering, and he knew all of the people interpreting it, hearing it, would remember it. He is saying, you are the icon of God. And in the same way that the coin belongs to Caesar because it has the icon of Caesar, you belong to God because you are the icon of God. It's basic belief of he made us in his icon and likeness, image and likeness. Always when you use the word image, remember the word icon. And so what you have here is Jesus saying to people, are you living in submission to the icon of Caesar? Or are you living in submission to the icon of God? Because ultimately, you're going to obey one or the other. You may think you're independent, but you really are copying. This is one of the more fascinating things I find. It's so interesting to me that everybody, especially we Americans, we think, I don't copy anyone. I am myself. Well, I am myself. Most of the time, most Americans say, I am individual. And you know why you say that? Because you're copying everybody else who's saying, I'm an individual. That's what you're doing. It is popular in America. I don't obey anybody. I am an individual. And you see everybody else doing it, and everybody thinks, oh, I gotta do the same thing. So I don't copy anybody. But then you begin to look at how people's values and people, the way they dress. I get a big kick out of teasing, especially teenagers, but not only teenagers, but I like to tease them a little bit. You know, when, especially when teenagers walk around and they have these jeans that are all torn up, you know, I pick on them. I go up to them and I go, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. And they look at me and they're quite perplexed. And I go, listen, we're going to take up an offering for you. We're going to take up an offering. And they look at me and I say, yeah, because I noticed, then are you digging through the trash for your clothes? And of course, they go, oh, Father, you know, oh, Father. And I said, well, look, they're all torn. But notice, who would think that torn clothes are a thing of individuality? And those are the people who most individually says, I'm an individual, I don't follow anybody. Well, everybody's, you're paying extra for torn clothing. Duh. Okay. You're paying extra, but okay. You paid twice. So if you have some old clothes or torn clothes, put them on sale. You get twice the value. Okay. So what's happening is somebody, you're imitating somebody, and you're imitating either Caesar, meaning the culture and also the government, or you're deciding to imitate God. Ultimately, as the book of Ecclesiastes says, nothing is new under the sun. You're doing what everybody's doing it in some way or another. You may have the illusion of being an individual, but you really are not if you look at it deeply. So the question that Jesus is posing is this. Who are you either consciously or unconsciously giving yourself to, giving your imitation to? You're giving it to someone. You're imitating someone. When you're in high school, that's what they call peer pressure, right? You want to be in the group that you want to be. When you're in the workforce, you want to hang out with the original people. You want to be able to have a good job. You want to have a very nice house. And a lot of that comes from you don't want to be perceived as belonging to the wrong group. And when adults, I get the biggest kick out of this one too. Whenever I go walking, I sometimes go walking in the Galleria just to get some exercise. And I always go by these big stores like Louis Vuitton, okay, Louis Vuitton, or some of the other ones, you know, the place that sells shirts with the little horsey on it. I don't remember who that is. Ralph Lauren? Yeah, okay. And you see these purses and these shirts, and they're just purses and shirts, but man, you slap a little logo on them, and you adults are going to pay twice or three times the amount. Or you go to some shoes. You know, I can't remember. I used to tease some girls about the shoes that they bought. There's these, you know, tremendous shoes. Ooh, my goodness. And you pay a ton of money. It's the same thing. What are you doing? You're setting your identity is coming because you walk around and going, I have a horsey. I have a horsey, okay? Or I have a horsey on my butt. Yes, sir. I'm cool. I am so freaking cool. It's pathetic, okay? Or you have a purse, you know, that has this pattern. I think they're ugly, but this pattern. And I'm sorry. Every time I've used this in a homily, there are people who have purses like that, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to tease you. But if you brought a purse like that, people will walk out of the church going, hide my purse. I don't want anybody to see me as Father. Just look, if you bought it because it's a good purse, fine. But if you bought it for the logo, I'm hitting at you. Okay? So the question is that Jesus is asking is, who are you imitating? Are you trying to imitate the icon that you belong to, or the icon of the world? Give to God what belongs to God. What belongs to God? You do. You are His icon. You are stamped with His icon. And you can give the coin to Caesar, but that may not be your chief allegiance, either culturally or governmentally. And let me finish with this. I read a book a long time ago that was making the argument that people in the United States and in Europe, in many places, actually in all over the world, are substituting legality for reality. Now, this might sound interesting. Whenever I'm on the radio, which is on Sunday nights, we get people saying to me, or to me and Rabbi, or the Protestant ministers, why are you all trying to impose your morality on the rest of us? It's legal to do blah, 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 blah. It's legal to have an abortion. It's legal gay marriage. It's legal. And they go on to all kinds of stuff. And because the implication is, because it's legal, it is right. That's the implication. Stop trying to impose your values. We have had our God, the government, even though our government doesn't declare itself a God, we treat it, the moment your argument for the morality of something is because it's legal, you are saying the government has taken the place of God because they are defining the morality of anything. And so you are living in the world of legality, not of reality. Because laws, look folks, it was legal in Nazi Germany to kill Jews. That was the defense of the Nazi criminals in Nuremberg. It was legal. Okay? And the guys who were being tried in Nuremberg, the Germans, were saying, why are you trying us? We didn't do anything wrong. It was legal. The people of Germany made it legal to kill Jews. We were only following orders, doing something that was legalized. And what they had to do in the trials of Nuremberg, they had to come up with something. There was nothing they could charge them with. You know where they charged them with? Crimes against humanity. You know what? They had to make that up. They didn't exist. That's a little subset of saying God has made some things that are so different, that are so above right and wrong of the law, that it doesn't matter how many laws you pass, it is not right to do this. There is a higher law. Of course, nobody wanted to admit that, but what they're saying is there is a higher law than just the national law. And just because the law says something and it's right doesn't make it right. Governments are kings or emperors or presidents, or Congress is not God. And that's the whole point of this. Because Caesar had made himself God and had made himself the ultimate definer of morality. Basically, Rome was living in an era of legality. And what Jesus is saying is there is a higher law than just whatever Rome or Congress or the presidents say. And it happened, you see it, of course, clearly in the German example. And so what you see here, what is Caesar's? What is God's? Jesus is not saying rebel against the government, but he is saying the government is not top priority. The government is second or third. What is top priority? What top priority is what has God's icon on it. And God's icon is you. You are obliged to make sure that you make the moral decisions of your life not on what's legal, but on what's real and moral, and that belongs to God. And that, friends, is what's called being an intentional disciple. If you are just hanging out in this culture, if you're just hanging out and you want to go with what everybody's doing because the social pressure to fit in is so heavy, then you are basically a disciple of Caesar. You're a disciple of the way things are in the culture, because Caesar stands for the culture and what the culture is imposing as right and wrong. If you are that, then at least admit it. You follow the government. You follow the culture. You are Caesar's. But what Jesus is saying is you can't do that. You are the stamp of an icon of God. You belong to God, and you must give your intentional. Look at the word intentional. You cannot be a Christian and not swim against the tide. The tide, if you let the tide carry you, it's going to carry you in the way the culture and the government say. If you're an intentional disciple, you can only swim against the tide, because your loyalty does not belong to Caesar. Your loyalty belongs to God. And why? Because you are an icon of God. You belong to Him. You're either God's or you belong to Caesar. Take your pick. Think about it.